Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. If you're just joining us, we're listening to a panel discussion for Purdue Fort Wayne, taking a look at elections from an international perspective. Andy Downs, director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics, will ask his next question in a moment. And Cheyenne Palmaju, deputy director of the Political Reform Program with New America in Washington, will be the first to answer. Thank you for listening.
It's exhausting for voters, but it's not like it's easy for the candidates. I mean, the candidates have a fair amount of work to do here. And as Cheyenne pointed out, this is not inexpensive. Even if we limited it to a window, the idea that you would be able to campaign in the states to, you know, 300 million plus people, that would take significant resources. And so there's some logic to having a window that's maybe a little larger than what we see in terms of, for example, Quebec provincial elections are going on right now. There's a fairly tight window. What we see in France and Brazil, there are some windows to what happens there. Do we actually benefit by not having limits on when our campaigning takes place?
I don't know if we benefit. I think that's hard to know. I think that one potential benefit would be that if maybe you're a candidate that doesn't have that kind of financial network and that you know it will take you a long time to build those connections and to be able to raise a certain amount of money that would, you know, make your candidacy viable, then sure, you know, if you can start your campaign 5 years before you decide running for office. Apart from that, I think it's hard to think of any other reason why that's beneficial, especially both for the electorate, but also for the candidates themselves.
But do we have some First Amendment issues here? I mean, how do we balance this idea that I'm allowed to say what I want, especially in an era of, say, Citizens United? I can say what I want, but you're going to limit me and when I can engage in campaign activity? That seems to be a very difficult set of circumstances to try and deal with.
Certainly, and I mean, the upside is we know these people by the time the election comes. The downside, certainly, again, you're having politicians not doing their day jobs, purposely not doing their day jobs, and running for election. It has another positive, you know, just to throw it in, is we've had some outsiders that most likely wouldn't have been nominated by their party and the old kind of party. Even Ronald Reagan, definitely Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter. These are people that wouldn't have been president of the United States had it not been for this kind of open, long season where they could kind of get rolled out and introduced to the American public.
Mm-hmm. Julie, you mentioned already the two rounds in France. Explain to those who don't know the amount of time between the two of them, and then a little more specifically, here we're very familiar with candidates needing to run out to the extremes to get their nominations, and then they run back toward the middle to secure the majority of votes. There's not time for that really in the French system.
And in fact, because I was thinking about that question earlier today, because of the fact that one has to put one's dossier forward, there's not really the opportunity to move too far left or right to get to the center. So the first round happens in the end of April. And on a Sunday, voting is on a Sunday so that everyone can attend. And France has a far higher success rate of voter attendance than we do in the United States. And then 2 weeks later is the final round. So you have 6 to 8 candidates, let's say, for the presidential election. They're voted up or down. The two that have the highest percentages of votes then go to the second round. So there's not any time for them. They have to solidify themselves and present themselves in the best possible manner to the public. So that's what happens. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
Cheyenne, Brazil has a runoff as well. How many weeks between the first and second round?
So first round, October 7th, second round, October 28th.
And how do you see candidates running one direction and then another after they see who the finalists are? Or how does it work there?
It's possible to make some tweaks, I think mainly because we have, last time I checked, you know, this changes all the time, but last time I checked, we have 32 political parties in Brazil registered. That number fluctuates by, you know, a couple here and there. Five of them are really the ones that control government, but candidates are able to shift their positions a little bit after the first round because they have to be looking for these coalitions. And I think that voters are usually not surprised when they see that happening. Voters in Brazil, I think very much like voters in most places, are pretty jaded. And, you know, it takes a lot to surprise a voter in Brazil. So seeing a candidate who promises X, but then once he or she, you know, goes through the first round, ends up changing that platform to Y is not really a huge surprise.
And in this case, we're not talking about going after that median voter that we see in the United States. Here it's, oh, I believe that I have 40% of the vote. I need 50%. Which coalition do I want to try and form? So I'm going to say something that appeals to this party or that party.
Precisely, yeah. Yes.
Now, Mike, I think there are a lot of people who would not mind if the U.S. went to a similar sort of arrangement mm-hmm. because of what appears to be an advantage about not running out to the extremes and then running back, but also tightening up that window. What do we know about runoff elections? Do we see benefits? Do we know if there are benefits?
All the time in these type of systems, the electoral systems in democracies try to provide representation to different sectors of society, but also some governing stability. And those things don't go together. And so usually with a runoff system, in this case, you have five or in, you know, a half dozen to 12 parties in these major democracies that can compete in the first round, that can put positions out, that can be against the status quo generally. And so it allows for representation, allows for people that they say vote for your heart the first round and then your head the second round. You know, but that second round provides the stability and the governing stability in these places where you have a pretty firm answer with a majority vote for sure in the second round of who the winner is. So it provides both some representation and some stability.
The U.S. really has basically two major political parties, all respect intended to the different groups who are also out there, libertarians, greens, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Why have we ended up with only two in the United States?
Well, part is our rules that directly favor the old argument, Duverger's law, you know, that somebody realizes pretty quickly where if they support a third party, that they're not likely to win. And so maybe their preference switches is to support their second favorite party or vote against their worst favorite party. And there's also a political culture element that the United States, compared to France and compared to other democracies, doesn't have the left. Due to the American historical tradition, the socialist movement didn't hit here for numerous reasons. And so we've lacked really even conservative politics in these European democracies are to the left of us in many ways. And then you have the socialist or social democratic parties, which are very far to the left. We also don't have nationalist parties either. So we're pretty tight just by our American political belief systems. Anyway, so our parties are they're more like liberal parties in those democracies, which, while important, are probably third or fourth parties, I would say, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. Probably. So,
Julia, how easily could you distinguish, especially as somebody from the outside, how easily could you distinguish between whether it was even just the two finalists versus the six or the dozen before that? I mean, could you, when someone said a party, could you say, oh, I know exactly where they stand after reading a couple of newspaper articles, or was it kind of confusing for you?
For me, it was not so confusing because I had taken a political science class about French politics before I left, and so I kind of understood. But you can watch television and find out, and people generally know in France that Emmanuel Macron worked for François Hollande, and you know these things, so you kind of, they're like, France is much smaller than the United States, mm-hmm. and people are not coming up from, the known candidates are pretty well known across the board. Just as anecdotally, the way I found things out was I would take taxi rides and ask the taxi drivers mm-hmm. who they were voting for. And it was very fun to hear what the different, you could almost predict that. predict where they were. And then you would find out as you get more familiar with Paris, you will learn that certain arrondissements, certain neighborhoods are going to be conservative, mm-hmm. certain neighborhoods are going to be more liberal, certain neighborhoods are going to be more center. And that's kind of a known mm-hmm. thing as well.
Now, it's interesting, you mentioned Macron, who basically started his own political party for this one election. So there's a movement yeah. that we would almost never see here.
There's a possible creativity, and it's interesting, I was just reading today that several French political parties are actually coalitions of smaller parties that have become mm-hmm. coalesced. Mm-hmm. And so that can work, and so you take a certain part of that and a certain part of that, and because French society with the populist movement is shifting so quickly, you'll have people changing parties. So right now, my political science professor was absolutely amazed at the fact that very far left people and very far right people were coming together to vote for Marine Le Pen. Mm-hmm. And he was studying mm-hmm. the reasons for that. And of course, it's economic, but that's kind of, it fluctuates in France. And I would say, first of all, En Marche is now a political party, but when it started, it was what he called a movement.
Right.
And now I think it's a formal political party. Mm-hmm. Maybe you know more about that than I do. But that was kind of this upswell, this discontent with the two major central left party and right party. They wanted to find something a little bit more coalesced.
Mm-hmm. Cheyenne, 32 parties down to two. When you got here, what did you think?
When I first came here, I thought that was great. I felt that I had a solid grasp on, okay, what each party stands for, and, you know, am I a conservative? Am I progressive, liberal, libertarian? That was really reassuring. You know, I came here on a student visa, wasn't able to vote or anything, but I was really excited about the idea of, you know, if I were a voter here, I would definitely want to vote because I know exactly what these parties stand for. So that initially was pretty exciting. I think that over the last few years, it's shown that the two-party system isn't holding anymore. I think that there's a lot of people who don't feel that either party represents them, but because you don't have another option, you have to either vote for the party that you think, you know, comes the closest to representing you, or, you know, pretty much voting against the other party, like you mentioned. But I do think that there's probably a sweet spot between 2 and 32.
31, maybe. 30, who knows?
Yeah.
Do either of you, sitting here with me, do you think that we would benefit from having a viable third party? Julie?
I would like to see that happen. I would like to see a viable third party. I think the polarization in the United States right now is such that we need to find some solution, and that might be a way to do it. I think part of the issue has to do with campaign finance reform. If we could get campaign finance reform working for us, maybe we would see the two parties come together a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it.
Mike?
Yeah, and, you know, usually we see third parties manifested in presidential elections, but Theodore Lowy, a political scientist, said, you know, where we should really see them emerge is in Congress, because they would maybe be able to break through on some of these big issues and kind of triangulate some issues and take away some of this deadlock. And so we often see them pop up in the wrong place, that maybe it would be the legislative branch where they would do the most good, but getting them there is the hard part.
We'll be back with more from WBOI Presents after a short break. Thank you for listening to 89.1 WBOI.